Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Everybody, and welcome. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hey there, Marky.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I have been getting inundated in my email mailbox with some stuff that I need to talk about.
Yeah, you listeners out there. By the way, we love getting your emails. It's really tremendous, especially, you know, the emails from the area we love because, you know, you're close by and we'll even see you. You can find us at our restaurants almost every night. It's funny. We get a lot of people that come in now and they say, and this is really bizarre to us, but because we've been doing this for a year and the show has met with, on the internet, incredible success. And we're very grateful to you all for that. But we'll be in the restaurant and somebody will say, you're here. I'm like, I'm always here. It's the restaurant business. Of course I'm here. So's Mark. He's over there. But we've been getting a lot of emails about a mention we did of a product by a great chef, a guy named David Burke, who's
opening a restaurant in New Jersey, and we're excited for that to open. He has taken over kind of a classic landmark called the Fromagerie down in Rumson.
And whatever he does, it's going to be a really welcome addition to the restaurant inventory of the Garden State. But there's a product that he's pushing, a retail product called, you know, he's sort of a...
This product has his name on it, and you've heard us talk about it on the show before. But it's called Flavor Spray.
It's David Burke's Flavor Spray.
And his picture's on the front of it. Before I start on my little
diatribe
about...
Diatribe.
Flavor sprays. I gotta beg David Burke to take his picture off the front of it and to take his name away from it, because I really don't like the stuff very much.
First of all, in principle, I have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. We're all about whole food, real food, honest food, and this is about sprays that you spray onto food.
Flavor spray. It's supposedly you spray it and
so you can spray chicken flavor. Parmesan flavor or pesto flavor.
And you know,
zero calories, zero fat, zero carbohydrates.
You know what I wouldn't have a problem with?
Lots, 100% disgusting.
You know what I wouldn't have a problem with? If somehow you took Parmesan cheese and you could spray it on your food in order to put less of it on than you may normally put in order to get Parmesan flavor.
All right, let's get into the meat of the matter. Stop dancing around, okay? This stuff's disgusting, all right?
It's awful. Okay, there, I've said it. It is some of the worst stuff that I have ever tasted in my life. And what I've decided is I'm going to come up with new uses for flavor spray. So this is actually an advertisement for you to go out and buy flavor spray. I think everybody should own some.
It's a fairly expensive little bottle, and the idea is that you can spray these flavors like pesto or a bunch of different barbecue, ranch, whatever, and spray them onto your food. And David even has recipes, barbecue pork chops, broil the pork chop, trim the ends off, spray pork chops with Memphis barbecue spray, toss spray asparagus with butter and Parmesan sprays. Toss spray is where you sort of toss it and spray it at the same time. It's a very interesting technique. Stupid. Then you spray your egg noodles twice with butter spray and once with bacon spray. That's kind of like a little recipe. Oh, no. You spray the egg noodles twice with butter sprays, once with bacon spray, and once with ranch spray to create your own recipe. Cut it out!
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Here's – you know what? If this tasted good and was actually something that – you know, you might want to taste, I'd say go ahead. So you've heard me on the show before, so I've come up with some uses for flavor spray.
Go ahead.
Okay. You've heard me talk in the past about, I cannot take credit for this. This is my 9-year-old's flavor spray idea for the flavor spray. After she tasted it, Laura said, "Oh, what a great idea." And she doesn't know what Banaca is because she wasn't alive when it was popular back in the day. But her idea is you give a little Banaca spray to a child if it has said a swear word. Okay, so you spray a little pesto spray right in there.
You behave or I'm going to rinse your mouth out with flavor spray. David Byrd could be feared by children across America. And look, I got nothing against the guy. It's just this stuff. We thought about it. We said, you know, we like David. He's a great chef. He's done a lot of great things. Do we want to come and knock this product? But we ordered a bunch of them online and we tried them and they're absolutely revolting and artificial. And
so he's talking about the flavor spray diet.
That's my opinion.
And I think flavor spray diet is a great idea because anything that you spray this on, I'll refuse to eat. Okay, so that's covered. It's a great application for this. I am absolutely all for it. I'm fairly certain, and of course I'm guessing, but I'm fairly certain that you could put this on as a bug repellent because I'm sure that it would scare them away as well.
The bugs as well.
New game. We could do a new game where you spray the flavor spray in your mouth. It's kind of like Pictionary, and you have to try and guess what the actual flavor is supposed to be.
I'd have trouble.
that one's not.
We actually played really that game. We actually played that game. We bought a bunch of the flavor sprays and we brought them into the restaurant and we tried with our staff to figure out what stuff was and some of them you actually can tell what they are, but they all taste to me anyway. The ones that I've tasted, they taste like artificial. They taste like, you know, bacon flavor spray. Please have some bacon.
I have another application.
Yeah.
For people who want to quit smoking, you could spray it on the end of the cigarette that they put in their mouth, and they'll have to throw their cigarettes away. They'll have to. There'll be no other choice.
Yeah, you never know. It might smell good with smoke like that.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Okay. I just.
Are we done? Can we be done with the flavor spray?
No, I'm not done. Okay, because here are some of his recommendations, and again, I say his, but I know that there's some giant marketing firm that's behind this. I do hope. Mochaccino flavor spray and coffee.
Yeah. Why not just put the coffee? Why not put the mochaccino flavor spray in hot water?
Yeah, exactly. There you are. Tomato basil spray on crackers. Okay, here's my problem with that for the diet tip. Tomato and basil are the things you should be eating when you're on a diet, and crackers are the things you shouldn't be eating when you're on a diet.
Wait, hold on. Why don't we then put the cracker flavor spray on your tomato and basil?
That's a really better idea. I like it. I like that.
Except
one.
It doesn't crunch. Flavor spray doesn't crunch. Yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff that's on it, like he has a pesto flavor spray. What's wrong with eating pesto?
Right.
You know what? I mean, pesto's bad for you. Pesto's going to make you fat. Too much pesto and you're going to get fat. What? Your cholesterol's going up from pesto?
From
nuts
basil,
and oil and basil? Please.
I don't get it. I'm not buying in, and you can't make me.
Yeah. I can't make you. I'm not going to. But you made me because you ordered all the ones for the restaurant and made me spray. But we did. We took them. We sprayed them on chips. We tried to give them a chance because we knocked them a little bit because we don't like the concept. But then we ordered a bunch. We had our producer order a bunch of them. We got them in. We gave them a fair shake. We sprayed them on stuff. In our opinion, they're gross.
I know. I taste people on them all the time, and I say things like, can you believe this?
I know. What was that one television show he was on where he sprayed it for the host of the show?
I have no idea.
It was a morning show he was on.
Well, that's why I have no idea it was a morning show.
And he said, what do you think? And she looked at him and my reading of what her eyes said was, oh, my God, that's gross. But she said, oh, it's good. Yeah. It's good. What are you going to say? David Burke's on your show. You know what I mean? Anyway, David Burke opening a restaurant in New Jersey. We wish him much luck and great success.
And I'm sure the restaurant's going to be great.
And
am sure of that. And David, if you're listening, we love your stuff. Just move away from the flavor spray.
And I think if you're out
there listening, no one will get hurt.
Step away from the flavor spray. I think actually what you should do is you should go online and buy some flavor spray. You can find them online. And just, if you don't believe us, check it out for yourself. Maybe you disagree with us. Maybe you'll think they're great. Maybe they will help you in your cooking at home.
I want everybody to send us an email saying what they think of flavor spray and what uses they can have.
I want everyone to send us an email if they can come up with a use for flavor spray. Listen, to give them a fair shake if you want to try it and see if you disagree. It's www.flavorspraydiet.com. Check it out. We'll talk to you in a moment. We're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, the stage left in the Capitol Party Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Fabio Trabocchi.
Fabio is the executive chef at Maestro at the Ritz-Carlton in Washington, D.C., where Mark and I have gone a number of times and been duly impressed. And so is the James Beard Foundation, because they named him Best Chef of the Mid-Atlantic Region this year. Fabio, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Hi, everyone.
It's quite a great honor. Congratulations on the James Beard Award.
It has been a wonderful night, not only for me, but also for our team, because we've been working on this for some time now, and it's nice, as much as it's nice for me personally, also for them to recognize their effort. You know?
Well, you've been in Virginia now for how long?
We moved here from London. When I say we, it's me and Emanuele Fissore, which is the general manager of Maestro, in the 2000. And the idea was to revamp this restaurant. They used to be called The Restaurant back then, and we named Maestro after we came over. It took us 9 months to reconfigure the space. I designed the kitchen. The kitchen was actually a formal seating area. We cut the restaurant size, and we took some space to build this show kitchen. And then we opened on April 10, 2001. That was our first trading day on the business for Maestro, and we've been here since then.
Now, you mentioned your show kitchen, and that's exactly what it is, because you guys are on stage. You are part of the show. You're part of the experience when you go to Maestro. It's all right out there in front of you. But what made you decide to kind of make that a stage and open up that space for everybody to watch?
Well, first of all, the added drama to the restaurant experience is certainly makes it more entertaining for the diners. But the real reason behind the fact that we designed the type of kitchen was that we need a well-equipped kitchen to produce the kind of menu we want to do the type of restaurant we have on our mind.
Yeah, but most of us have well-equipped kitchens, and we put them behind closed doors so that we can yell at each other.
Yeah, I don't ever yell. I just raise my voice on the radio. It was both a necessity, and we can only use that type of space to do a show kitchen. Show kitchen, to me, they're important because people, they get entertained, at the same time they get to see what's behind the fact that they're getting a plate of food. I mean, how much effort there is, how much coordination there is behind, in the kitchen, who's doing what, and we're really cooking alive, and that makes them kind of embracing the entire experience from a different perspective. I'm all for open kitchen from now on, and I didn't before I came to Maestro.
Now, when you came to Maestro to open up in the United States, what was your mission exactly to do? I mean, obviously you came into the Washington, D.C. area, and you really made a splash nationally almost immediately. I mean, enough that Mark and I got on a train up here shortly after you opened and went and visited your restaurant and had a wonderful dinner. And then we had an anniversary of our restaurant. Every year we go out, so we took our partners out and went down a second time and took our maitre d' and our sommelier down and our chef. And we had a great meal at your place. What was it like coming to the United States, and what was different about operating a restaurant here than in Europe?
Well, I always want to come back to the United States. I, for personal reasons, back in 1995, I met my wife in Washington. I was running a restaurant in downtown D.C., and we've been together ever since. And I actually worked for the same company that was running that restaurant also in Spain. And then we moved to London. I stayed in London for about almost 4 years, and I knew people inside the Ritz-Carlton. I actually had some chefs that they worked for me before they were in the Ritz-Carlton at that point. The opportunity was to be able to set up a fine dining restaurant, which was and still nowadays part of my dreams, and the opportunity to design my own kitchen, to design the menu, to design the entire concept of the restaurant. So that was an opportunity that I jumped on, and I like the challenge to transform something that it was not really working before into something successful.
Do you find, though, that working with American cooks and American chefs and with the American employment system and American waiters, do you find that, because you've now had experience a couple times on both sides of the pond, as it were, are there differences in the work ethic and the way the job gets done here than there?
There are, yes. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, but that doesn't mean that it cannot work. I think the approach from our side, being people that are giving the vision and they're leading those operations, needs to be different. I see a lot of people that have more dedication now than in the past. And I see a lot of American chefs that are determined to make great cuisine, and they put in, full passion on it. Mm-hmm. And it's the same in Europe. You know, I wouldn't say that it is different or it's more challenging. I wouldn't use those words. The approach is different, but not necessarily creates problems. As long as it's handled correctly, as long as the kitchen is organized correctly, as long as the dining room is supervised by the right person, as long as systems are in place and people get trained correctly, there is absolutely no problem.
Our guest today is Fabio Trabocchi. He is the executive chef of Maestro at the Ritz-Carlton in Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C., and he's this year's James Beard Award-winning Best Chef in the Mid-Atlantic region. We'll be back talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and stage left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis are stage left, and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant's our guest is Fabio Trabocchi. He is the executive, the chef of one of the best restaurants in the country, really, and he's a recent James Beard Award winner for Best Chef Mid-Atlantic Region. His restaurant is called Maestro, where Mark and I have dined a couple of times. It's in the Ritz-Carlton, in, just outside of Washington, D.C. Fabio, when you, you've looked at both sides of the Atlantic in cooking and in dining, and you've been here. I mean, you were here a long time ago, and now you're back again. Have you seen a change in the American diner, you think? Do you think the American diner is more adventurous or more knowledgeable than they were?
They are. They're certainly more aware of what good food is. They are more careful in what they're choosing. They are more willing to take some risks. And when I say risks, maybe it's just they're stepping out of their habits and they try to eat something new, something that has been proposed to them.
So what kind of risks do you like to help them take?
Sorry?
What kind of things do you think that Americans are more open to now in your dining room that maybe they wouldn't have been 15 years ago
than they were before?
Well, you know, I was myself impressed 5 years ago when we opened that our tasting menu was more popular than people eating a la carte, because our tasting menu is decided by me, and so they don't really have a choosing on what they would like to eat. So there you already felt the first sense that, you know, things that were changing from when I was here five years earlier in a different restaurant.
I think that sometimes people don't realize how much fun it is for us when someone does order the tasting menu, because that's kind of a complete dinner that we've put together, that we've spent either with ingredients that we found at the market that day, or some specialty ingredient that we're trying something new with, that we've put a complete dinner together with that whole package, and I think that might be a little bit more fun for us.
So back then, and still today, the majority of our sales was tasting menu, and I was really impressed at the beginning because I thought, you know, that would have been the menu that we sell the least. And those are the things that they are changing on the American diner habits, and they're recognizing quality a little bit better than it used to be before, and they're willing to put a little bit more of their own, you know, investment on the dining experience, just because they like the difference and the different quality. Things are really, really changing, and I see a lot of chefs are different section of our industry, where they're running in bistro, trattorias, or high-end restaurant, trying to get out there the best food possible.
We're gonna take a quick break for the news, and we come back. We're gonna talk more with Fabio Trabocchi of Maestro Restaurant down in just outside Washington, D.C. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott, Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today our guest is Fabio Trabocchi. He is the chef at Maestro at the Ritz-Carlton in McLean, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. He is James Beard Foundation's best chef in the Mid-Atlantic, and he joins us to talk to us today about his restaurant and his cuisine. Fabio, I want to ask you about your cuisine, because I think that all great restaurants, it's Mark in my opinion, that all great restaurants sort of have a point of view. You know, you have something that it is you're trying to say, and your cuisine is doesn't really easily fall into any specific category. Can you talk to us about what's your mission, what's your food about, what mission, what's your...
Well, you know, all my ideas are based on Italian regional cuisine, but what I try to do is to bring in each recipe and each traditional dishes a lot of myself and a lot of new technique and method of cooking. So it becomes an Italian cuisine which has a personal interpretation. But the foundation of my entire cuisine is all based on Italian regional cuisine. I like to play it with different things at times. What we did is we divide the menu in traditional and evolution, where, you know, some of the items that can be more easy to be recognized on a traditional menu, even though those ones are executed on a modern way, and the evolution menu, there is more freedom for me to go and to use many other ingredients in the same dish. This is the cuisine we are doing. The cuisine is also that we are doing is based on the freshest ingredients possible, the highest quality. We're dealing with different farmers that grow animal to our specifications. We are requiring certain vegetable and gardener farmers to grow herbs, which we pick in the seeds for them, and we bring them over here sometime from Italy. We have a really almost maniacal research of the ingredients in order to provide the best for our customer.
I think that the chefs in this country are really learning that the ingredients, that they can have an impact on the ingredients that they're getting, and I think it's making a difference in our food. But I'll tell you, Fabio, one of the things that I enjoyed in going to your place, in reading and researching your restaurant before we went the first time, it was described in some of the publications as kind of edgy Italian, you know, kind of interesting Italian, but I did find it to be that way. Then at the same time, you offer a beautiful traditional cheese course with 40 cheeses from around the world to finish out the dinner. Why the mix of old and new there?
Because the people that will come to our restaurant, they come in for a special occasion. So my mission is to give them something to remember when they walk out of here. They don't necessarily going to be able to come back, and they're not going to reschedule a visit on a shorter period of time. So the fact that they're coming to our establishment is because they have something to celebrate, something special in their lives. And we want to make the experience memorable. So we're embracing traditional evolution. We're embracing also other product. I like to bring the best that I can find that day on the table. And it needs to be for them an experience that they could talk about and they can share with friends, and is on their memories, you know.
You really touched upon something in the last couple of minutes that we think is very important. I mean, we have we work with a number of local farmers, and they're now growing to our specifications, and we're taking part in deciding what gets planted, you know, and that's an evolution. American chefs didn't do that 10 years ago, and very few people still do it today, but we have a lot of chefs who listen to the show, fortunately, and on the computer we have a lot of industry listeners. And one thing we hear all the time from people who work inside hotel organizations is that they find it very hard in a way. I mean, they have tremendous some working in a hotel. You have some resources at your disposal that the independent operator doesn't have.
Constrictive is the word I hear.
But sometimes you're more constricted, and it's harder to go outside the normal supply chain and establish a relationship with farmers and bring things in. How do you find working on such a high level inside a hotel organization?
Well, you know, I've been given a certain freedom. And I think that freedom, if I'm allowed to say so, paid off.
Yeah. Evidently.
I don't like to express myself in this way, but that was the reason. I mean, we have certain goals to reach. So, yes, we went out there. We talked to farmers. We asked them what we want. We invite them over for dinner. We make them taste what we were doing with their own ingredients so that they realize where we were going when they're growing things for us. We show people, you know, even that we need to age baby lambs before we can cook them. We told them what we would like our chicken or ducks to be fed with. And all this job is, at the end, pays off on the plate because we have to minimize the amount of the transformation that we bring to the food. And we just have to cook it correctly, accompany it with the right sauce, the right garnish. Don't do too much to it. If it's a great ingredient, it will be already a star.
You know, you just touched on something that Francis and I believe very, very much in, but you don't see in a lot of chefs. The farmer, when the farmer tastes the food and tastes the end product of what you're trying to produce, you give that farmer some insight as to the kinds of things you're looking for. You give him kind of a view into the end product, and I think that that can really help you get the type of products that you're looking for.
And I think it's difficult for the independent operator to go and look up what the local farm is wherever you are, but it's really rewarding. But you there are resources at your disposal. You can go to your state Department of Agriculture. That's how we found some. And when you bring these folks in as part of the community, you know, Fabio, we did a dinner where we had all the farmers that supply us come and sit with, and we invited our clients as well. We did the farmer dinner. And it was amazing when people put together, you know, the face of the farmer, the food that they're eating, and, you know, the chef comes out, you know, I mean.
And at the same time, I think it was really educational for the farmer and rewarding as well for them to see the products that they worked especially hard on to produce a certain quality and style level.
I think it's all based on building a relationship, you know, and you don't figure out exactly how many farmers or which farmers you're gonna use on the first year of your operation. You're gonna start to establish contact. You need to get a close relationship with these people, and every farmer that I met in my life, my father was a farmer. They never will turn you down. I mean, if they understand, we are passionate at a different level for the same thing at the end of the day, food. So, you know, if you build the right relationship, if you invite them over, make them taste their own food. And the fact that you guys invite also the client is extremely important because also they're getting a sort of a learning experience of how many people there is behind the restaurant experience. You know.
Now, Fabio, I understand you're going to be coming out with a book later this year. Is that correct?
October, my book is going to come out. The title is Cucina of Le Marche. Le Marche is this region of Italy that is on the Adriatic coast. It borders with Emilia-Romagna, Umbria, Abruzzi, and Lazio. And that's where I come from. It's basically a memoir of childhood recipe and how I started in cooking even before I decided to become a chef.
Now, you say it's part memoir as well?
Yeah, there is a lot of personal stories before we introduced each single recipes because in this book I describe the way I grew up and I tell a lot about my father that used to be a farmer that he has to move into the city and reinvent himself with a brand new job. What we used to do in my house is every Saturday we were going shopping to farmers to do our Sunday meals. And so we were on the road to get the best chicken, the best eggs, the best vegetables, and I was, as a young kid, able to see the whole thing from scratch. And then on Sunday, my father will cook off the entire meal, and we probably will be sitting at the table for hours and hours.
That's awesome.
Which is, you know, it's the Italian thing to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny that your story. My father was a businessman who lived in the city his whole life, and one of his great dreams, which he attained at a point in his life, was to buy a farm and to farm the farm. And we became gentleman farmers, you know, kind of weekend farmers with a place in upstate New York. But kind of the opposite story there. He kind of pushed himself into getting onto the farm as opposed to being forced into the city.
Yeah. You know, I think that though what we all share in common is that idea of sitting around the table with family, and I think that, you know, families are finding it harder and harder to do that. And I think that in a sense, when you get the farmer involved and the chef involved and the patron involved, you're creating a sense of community. Hey, listen, we need to take a short break, Fabio. We'll come right back.
Okay.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants, and also of The Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left from Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, and our guest is Fabio Travocchi. He is the chef at Maestro in McLean, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. He is also the James Beard Foundation's Best Chef of the Mid-Atlantic Region this year. Fabio, your book that's coming out a little bit later this year, it's going along the trend of a lot of the great books and the books whose authors we've had on the show and books that we've been reading. There is a cookbook.
Frankly, the books that we like the best.
Right. But there's also a lot of the books spent, you know, with the context and telling a story and telling your memoir. I mean, how much of your book is cookbook and how much of your book is memoir?
I think it's a 50-50. And I like also to explain in this book to explain to you know, to people that are getting into industry, how did this, you know, the chef start his life even before he knows he will become a chef.
Mm-hmm.
Which it can be, you know, it can be helpful for especially young cooks that are getting to cooking school at the beginning of their career. You know, there's a lot of them, I'm sure, that are insecure whether they choose the right path for their life. So maybe, you know, this book can help a little bit to explain what it takes and where the real, you know, love for food comes from, and mm-hmm. or at least it did for me, and it still does nowadays.
What we're finding is the books that we're enjoying the most, and certainly there's been a spate of them in the last year or two. The books that I'm enjoying the most aren't just a collection of recipes. They're not just a bunch of facts written on a sheet and some chef hands them or some collection of chef hands them out and you says, here, try and cook these. The books that we've really thoroughly enjoyed are the books that put that in context, that say, okay, well, my family, you know, made capuzzella, the sheep's head. Well, the reason they made the sheep's head is because they didn't have as much money to buy the primary cuts of meat. And, you know, this family tradition came down from person to person to person and those types of things. And I think when you talk about recipes and things like that in context, they make a lot more sense. And you can decide as the person who's going to make them whether that context makes sense to you.
That's exactly what we try to do with my book. I mean, I explain for each recipe what was coming from, what was the reason why we were eating that and not something else, you know, why that was on the table on that specific day, what were the custom and the tradition behind the dish, so that people can filter it a bit better why those recipes that were done this way, and, you know, and also if you get told how the dish was done and the story behind, I think you are more appreciative of what you're eating and you have a better sense of what, you know, you're going to be able to judge the dish in with a different perspective.
Well, it's funny because I think that people view food as a way to come together in community, as a way to be connected with people and to traditional recipes, a way to be connected with the past. And I think in America especially, we've lost a lot of our ethnic traditions, and we don't live in the same city as our parents or our grandparents.
And we don't sit around the table and have meals together either.
And we
eat in the car on the way to soccer.
You know, I made mandatory for my family to sit at the table every Sunday.
I think that's great.
Us too.
I think that's great.
It's not, you know, should we do something else? Because we probably end up to be something else. We're probably going to be busy to do something else, but that has to be a stop on our week. You know,
yeah.
It has to be a moment where we switch off all our phones, we don't look at the computer, we don't check any emails, We just start to cook together. My daughter will set up the tables. My son will play with tomatoes and basil and make a big mess on the table. And I try to get over him so that I can cook something. I fire up maybe my charcoal now that the weather is good outside. Uh-huh. We're opening a good bottle of wine. I give a big kiss to my wife, and we there is no television, there's just us, mm-hmm. and we talk. You know, and we talk about whatever, and then we spend a few hours there.
And I think
do this once a week, I think it's very, very important.
I couldn't agree more, and I think that when you have a book like your book and the food is contextualized, people feel more of a connection to it, and it's not just a chemistry experiment, you know, a list of ingredients that somebody handed you and a procedure to be done. And we're going to put a link up to Fabio's book as soon as it's available on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Hey, you mentioned a bottle of wine, and I'm sort of the wine guy in the partnership, although we're both wine guys. When we were at your restaurant, we had some fabulous selections. You had a very helpful sommelier come over. How important is wine to food?
It's extremely important. It's extremely important in our restaurant to have the right person selling the wine, and I'm extremely lucky myself to have a guy like Vincent that really take care of our customer and not necessarily according to how expensive is the bottle they choose. He take care of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
He has this approach to wine, which is wonderful, and he has this approach to our patrons that is even better because everyone feels special, regardless of how expensive is the bottle they choose.
Do you favor Italian wines with your food?
I do, but not necessarily. I mean, I'm open to any selection that Vincent likes to bring on the table. And most of the time, you know, and I say 90% of the time, it's probably the right match. He has a fine palate, and sometimes the way we talk to each other, it's like talking to another chef, you know. And
mm-hmm.
he got it right there. You know, what's on the sauce? You got this and this. Okay, so we should put that. This wine maybe works, it doesn't work. Sometimes I ask him what wine we're going to serve so that we can choose a dish together.
Wow.
Yeah,
so you know,
this relationship is very important, very, very important.
It, you know, it's funny because we do the same thing. We did a dinner last night. We had a morel mushroom dinner. And one of the other things that we did was the chef cooked off all the food at 2 o'clock in the afternoon for that, all the dishes. And we picked all the wines that we had thought were going to go with the dinner. And we sat down, all of us together, and we tried the dishes and the foods. And we said, no, that doesn't work. This would work better. Why don't we change that sauce? Why don't we change this wine? And that kind of relationship is you know, very important to making a great restaurant great. Anyway, Fabio, thank you for coming on the show. You've been really great. We're going to link everybody up to your restaurant and your cookbook when it comes out so they can find you. We appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. That was Chef Fabio Tarbocchi of Restaurant Maestro at the Ritz-Carlton in McLean, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. Can't recommend it highly enough. You'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1155. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Sage Left and Capital Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest was the James Beard Award winner as Best Chef in the Mid-Atlantic Region, Fabio Tarbocchi from Maestro in the Ritz-Carlton in McLean, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C. I have to tell you, that is a great restaurant town to visit. And mm-hmm. if you live anywhere along the Northeast Corridor, the Amtrak train is a fabulous way to travel. And I will get on the train, go to, what's that place we always go to for lunch?
Haleo,
yeah, J-A-L-E-O. We love it. We're going to have the chef from Haleo on the
matter
show.
Of fact, the last time we went to Maestro, the next afternoon, we went to Haleo for lunch.
And it's nice to stay over, but you don't even need to stay over. The trains are a little inconvenient. If you don't mind traveling late, it's okay.
Or early.
But, well, you don't want to go to a restaurant and come back early. But, you know, to catch the train to Washington, and there's so much interesting stuff in and around Washington. And, you know, suburban Washington includes McLean, Virginia. The thing about the train is the train arrives, because I've taken the shuttle down to Washington as well, and you mm-hmm. get to Newark Airport, and you get there early, and you get through security, and you wait, and you board the train, and yeah, you're in the air for 30 minutes, but then you get off, and you got to get your, you know, get out, if you have any luggage, you got to get that, and then you got to get from the airport into Washington, and the train
is a much easier way to do it.
If you're accessible near the train, Mark lives near the Metro Park station where it stops, mm-hmm. and I live in Jersey City, so I live very near the Newark station, and a couple of trains even stop in New Brunswick. You get on the Metroliner.
It's under 3 hours.
And you sit in a seat that's like five times bigger than an airplane seat.
I mean, by the time you've gotten to the airport an hour early, parked a gazillion miles away,
right.
and get on the airplane and deplane, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Well, then you
got to
get into Center
anyway.
City. And the thing about the train is the train station was built very early. You know, and so you're in the middle of Washington, D.C. You walk out of the train station, you get in a cab, you go wherever you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it, and it's a great food town to go and visit. So
it truly is.
And another great...
There's a couple of other interesting things in Washington, D.C. too, to maybe see.
I went with my dad to the World War II, fought in World War II. I went with him and a bunch of his Marine buddies. They'd had a reunion down there, and we went to the... with his anti-aircraft battalion, and we went to the World War II Memorial. It was a pretty special place. Pretty special. Controversial, but a pretty special place.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to the Restaurant Guys talking about the cuisine down in Washington. We're going to go down there in the next week or so, and we suggest you do, too. Hope you've enjoyed the hour. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon. Mm-hmm.